Hi, everybody. I am Rosa C., and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. Let's give Margaret a big hand. She's real nice. Anybody in here can't remember what that first time is like getting up here, spacing all you people. You ain't been up here yet. I'm very grateful to be here, and I have no idea what I'm going to say. I do care what I'm going to say. I've cleaned it up a whole lot. I used to didn't care. But I'd like to thank Pat and Margaret and the other committee members for asking me to come down. I do know how to stay sober. I had to come to Georgia to be an old-timer. South Carolina wouldn't let me. And it's 20 years here, sobriety, and in South Carolina you got to be sober 25. So I finally made it there this year. And my sobriety... So I've come to celebrate that miracle with you. I'd like to give you a definition that I heard of an old timer. It's a person that'll go 1,000 miles to speak and they won't go across the street to listen. But I do. I go across the street to listen. I go downtown to listen and anywhere else because I finally learned how. And we were talking today driving down here that, you know, when did the miracle happen? And I think it's when I finally understood what y'all were saying. See, I come a long time, didn't know what you were talking about. And you'd say silly things like, ain't it grand to be sober? Or, you know, the think, and I was trying real hard not to. All the little slogans on the wall. But I'm from North Carolina originally. I live at Folly Beach Island, in right outside of Charleston now, which is another miracle in my life. I never dreamed I'd live in a place where I could get up in the morning and look out and see the ocean. I love the mountains, and I'm from the foothills of North Carolina, but I feel the energy at the ocean. I always have. It's been a very special place ever since I first seen it when I was about 12 years old. So my life is just miracle after miracle after miracle since I got, you know, drank myself into this program. And even that turned into something good. My husband used to tell folks, I went to work for a treatment facility after I'd been sober a while, and people would call up or something and ask him something. He said, well, she finally drunk herself into a good job. He worked overtime being a real bastard. He made it, too. But when I started drinking, it was after World War II. And when women had finally got a little bit of freedoms that we didn't know what to do with, really. You could go down the street, you know, without a hat and gloves and stockings on. Go in a bar by yourself. We didn't have no bars in North Carolina. We had beer joints. Served the same purpose. And it was just a freedom. And I see a change in all our existing lives as a result of that. And I don't remember too much alcohol in my home. My dad kept a bottle for medicinal purposes. And that's what he used it for. I don't know when it came there or when it left. It was there all the time, one bottle. I don't even know what brand it was. We just never bothered it, and I don't remember anybody telling us not to. It just was daddy's. You know how that goes. And so I was probably in high school when I had my first drink. And the first drink didn't impress me. It was Miller's High Life beer. I've heard in here since that most of us remember our first drink. And I was trying to impress one of them little old sailors that come back from World War II, you know. And that's why I drank it, because he was drinking one. And that's the nastiest thing I ever put in my mouth. I was old country buttermilk girl, and that was nasty. But I persevered. I drank it anyway. And I didn't know what that meant, you know, for me to consume something that I found so distasteful. I did not know what that was the beginning of, just to impress somebody else or to be in a certain crowd. And I didn't go home and tell my mother that I had it either. That's another significant thing. Today I know in doing my inventory. But it was the next time I drank that the magic happened. And God Almighty, whoo, I never wanted to stop then. I became the most beautiful thing you've ever seen. You know what Pat said when he met me? I can't get over this. So I'm going to put this on tape, Charles. I met him outside there, and he said, "Well," said, "you look better than I thought you would." He said, "I've heard you tape 2 or 3 times. And I thought, well, I guess I do sound like I've been rode hard and put away wet. But for the record, I am very, very beautiful. I just want that on the tape for anybody who hears it in the future so they won't be expecting some old crony to come walking in. But that alcohol made me pretty. Good Lord. And smart and witty and graceful. And see, I ain't changed much in physical physical appearances. So, I had shoulders before they had shoulder pads. And I looked like a linebacker when I was in my teens. And it made me tiny and petite. Now, that was the magic elixir for living life. Who'd want to give up something that made you feel like that and look like that and act like that? So, it continued to do that for me for a long time. I seemingly had a lot of success. I didn't get drunk every night. I didn't drink every night. I drank when it was available. I don't remember seeking it out at that time. It would just seem like the way to live, you know, drink when it was available, when you go to parties. And all that progressed into alcoholism. And I didn't know it. It's kind of like now, they're changing all the rules for living, ain't nobody told me, you know, and I go bumping my heads into walls. I went from home down to Charlotte, and I thought I'd just arrived in heaven when I got there, because they had ABC stores, and they sold beer 24 hours a day. I thought I'd just arrived. I started drinking beer for breakfast way before I've had a hangover. Because I loved it, you know, I really did. From that first Miller's High Life, see the change, and that wasn't but just a few years. And I continued to drink. It was the most important thing in my life. And I made choices around that drinking. And I didn't see anything wrong with that. I went to beauty school. The instructor there and the boss, the lady that owned it, reprimanded me about drinking beer at lunchtime. And I thought, well, what the hell? You know, I'm paying her to go to school here. She's going to tell me what I can have for lunch? I didn't see nothing wrong with that. But she did. And so I just quit. Hell with it. I became a waitress, a good one, too. Back somewhere along the way, I got some head waitresses to thank for me becoming a very good waitress. And I could always get a job. I always had money. I loved it. And I still like waitress work, but I'm too old now. But I could be, and you know, I found this out in my inventory too. Why? I could be around people and not involved with people. And I could, all, you know, always have money. So I started a precedent that was to continue for years. I'd work in Charlotte in the wintertime and Myrtle Beach in the summertime. I made a fortune, and I spent every penny of it. And one year I was getting ready at Labor Day to go back to Charlotte, and I was packing. Now, I told you I was from the foothills up there where the water don't get warm till September, and then it freezes right after that. So I did not know how to swim a lick, but I had 7 bathing suits. So y'all know I spent my summer strolling that beach looking good. I guess y'all see me in my most natural I've been in years. One time I had 3 picture IDs, and every one of them had a different hair color. You know, I was always trying to change the outside because I didn't know how to change the inside. And I'd paint and fix up and color and just do. Oh, well, I looked good. I really did. When I finally wound up in treatment, I've got a picture of me there, and I look really good physically. But till you get to the eyes, and then you see there ain't nobody home. Just old vacant shell. But that continued on for a bunch of years. And then I met this old sailor. He wasn't so old then, but he got old fast. And we were good drinking buddies and good in bed, and we called that love and got married. It sure felt good. But I was fortunate enough to hear Dawn down at Edisto Beach recently, and I identified a lot with her, you know, with the. He lied to me, you know. He was my Al-Anon. He finally got into Al-Anon program and got a little bit of sense. But he lied to me right from the start, you know. He told me he was sterile. He'd been into atomic testing and he was sterile. I guess I wanted to believe that real bad. But we were married a couple years and then found out he wasn't so sterile. And I thought I had a tumor, you know. I couldn't be pregnant. So I named that first tumor Duke. And then 11 months later, I had a second tumor. And I named her Tammy. And then I skipped 18 months. He went to the North Atlantic or something for, thank God. And then the next year I had another baby, and then the next year I had another. I had 5 babies in 4 years, no twins. And here is this budding alcoholic, already full-blown probably. But I didn't know anything about alcoholism, and drinking did not seem to be a problem. You know how we reach that place, you can drink or not drink. And never once thought anything about it being the drinking. Now, it's not because I didn't try birth control. Lord knows I tried it. I tried the diaphragms and the rhythm method and anything else anybody suggests. Like when my drinking got bad, I'd try anything anybody said so I could continue drinking. Never would do the one thing that would prevent it, you know, like stop drinking. Same way with babies. I'd try anything they would say, you know, so I could continue the behavior. And I didn't want the same results, but I got them every time. And I cried a lot. And I prayed a lot. And I couldn't talk to anybody about how I felt. Never in my life was anybody interested or ever suggested I talk about how I felt about anything. I didn't know how. And I was reminded of little Sissy or whatever her name was in Gone with the Wind. I had to act like I knew all about birth and babies. And I didn't know the first thing about it. And it was really a nightmare. I'd sit up and watch those telethons with the birth defects children and just agonize. I knew God was going to punish me through these children. Now, I have five beautiful babies, physically beautiful. A lot of them I drank during the pregnancies. I smoked through all of them. I just recently had a little grandbaby. She's the calmest little thing. Her mother didn't use caffeine or nicotine or any of that stuff. Every one of mine come out just wired. And I was right in there with them, you know. So I thank God for alcohol. I'd have probably killed some of them by it. It's really hard to know how I got through those years. But I did. I did. And still, drinking didn't seem to be a problem. There wasn't any money. My husband got out of the Navy, and we was buying a house there in Charleston. And so there just wasn't enough money to drink. And we didn't drink. And then as he began working and became a little more affluent, then we started drinking again on weekends and bring your own bottle kind of barbecues and outdoor cookouts and stuff like that. Still did not seem to be a problem. And then I don't know exactly what day or what hour, but the fighting started. And he started calling me names. He called me stuff like alcoholic. And I thought, well, my Lord, what's the matter with this man? I really could not understand that. Here this man professed to love me, was calling me an alcoholic. And, you know, he could say it. That was the nastiest sounding thing you ever heard in your life, the way he could say it. You're just a goddamn alcoholic. And I've been called some names, but that was the worst one. So I finally figured it out. I said, this son of a bitch wants all this liquor for himself. That's the only thing that made any sense. And, you know, it progressively got worse and worse and worse. And finally, it just got down to whoever got drunk first got beat. It was just that simple. It was fighting every weekend, drinking. If any of you people were raised in an alcoholic home, you know the hell my children went through. The broken promises, the lies, the name-calling, the fear, the inconsistencies. I don't wish that on anybody. And I didn't know what was wrong. I did not know what was happening. And alcohol was the only thing that relieved any of that. So I hadn't been home in a long time. You know, there's no way I can stand up here in an hour, and I'm going to stick to an hour because I've heard some of them long-winded people, and I hate them. I ain't got nothing in me that's important enough to go over an hour, let me tell you. And I hope God sees fit to clamp my jaws. And he's done that on a regular basis. But there's no way I can stand up here and give you details of 20 years of drinking and 20-some years of sobriety. Finally got more sobriety than I have drinking history. Isn't that wonderful? I never dreamed that would happen. But I went to see my folks in North Carolina, took all those children on a Greyhound bus. We got along all right for about the first 100 miles, and then they'd learn them seats would go up and down, you know. I thought they were going to kick us off somewhere on the side of the road. And they asked me every 5 minutes, "Mama, what time is it? When are we going to get there, Mama?" They'd never been anywhere, you know, and this was brand new, and they're tired of that bus. But while I was up there, my husband called me and said, "You'll have to come home." He said, "I got to go in the hospital and have a myelogram." Some of you may know what that is. It's a pretty serious test for find out something about your disc in your back, and they stick a needle in your spinal cord and draw fluid out. It's pretty serious, but I was tickled to death. See, oh, I got ahead of myself. We'd quit drinking. That's why I went home. We'd quit drinking. One of them Monday mornings, got up with them two black eyes and all them bruises, and he said, "Let's knock this shit off." And I was so beat up, I said, "Okay." And it wasn't 5 minutes later that I knew he meant it, and I knew I didn't. But I did. We both stopped drinking. And anyway, you know, I'd prayed some very sincere prayers doing that. It's about 8 or 9 months, maybe a little longer, 10. And I went home. That's how come I got to go home. I couldn't go drunk, naturally, so I went sober and or not drinking. But he called me and told me that, and I was tickled to death. You know, most people be real worried about somebody going in for that kind of testing. But I had me a bottle of vodka under that sink before he ever got admitted. And I never drank vodka before. Didn't even know about it. And that was another indication that I might be in a little trouble. But, see, I didn't know all that till I got to AA. Anyway, he had to have two discs removed from his back, and I prayed that he would just die while he's in there. And when he come out, I guarantee you, I knew whose side God was on, and it was mine. And you know, I was full of guilt before, and now I was eat up with it. I just knew God was just waiting. And see, babies, I used to check them for tails and horns and everything. Every soon as they'd bring them to me, I'd unwrap them. And now here I was in trouble again for wishing my husband would die. So I just could never, never even get good enough to even think about being good. Because I was always thinking stuff like that and then feeling guilty. See, I wasn't a real religious person, but I went to church in Western North Carolina when I was little. And if they didn't have enough sins, they made them up. They'd just make them up so you could feel guilty. I remember when, you know, I got called heathen for putting pokeberries on my lips, painting my lips up with pokeberry. And going to the motion picture shows was sinful. Till they made David and Bathsheba, and then all of a sudden it wasn't no sin no more. And when Miss Wilhelmina Crawley started wearing lipstick, that wasn't a sin no more. See, they're always doing that to me. They're making up these rules as they go. They don't tell me. And I continue to feel guilt. So I was really eat up with guilt then. And I was back drinking and didn't know what to do. And I got into some serious round-the-clock drinking. I couldn't stop. Always before, I could stop when I needed to. And for a little while, anyhow, I never could stay stopped. Never did even want to. Never once wanted to stay stopped drinking. I'd promised God stuff, but it never was to quit drinking. You know, it's like, "Don't let me be pregnant. I won't do that again." I never did keep any of them, but I'd make them. And so here again, I was in trouble. And I couldn't die and I couldn't live. And so I asked my husband, I said, "Would you call AA for me? I'd heard something about AA through some people up in Charlotte or something." didn't know what it was. He said, I ain't going to do a damn thing for you. And I thought, well, that son of a bitch is waiting for me to die. I remember that being the only clear thought I'd had in months. So I got up and called it myself. Because I sure didn't want him to be happy about nothing. So that was the first time I attempted AA. And it was such a relief not to drink. It took me months to sleep or eat or anything. I was in such bad shape. I was dehydrated. I looked like an old snake scale, you know, just my skin just falling off of me. Probably hollowed out eyes. Anyway, the lady that came to see me with 90 pounds of mouth, I ain't never. Her name was Sadie R. She was 17 years sober. And she stood in my room and she looked at me. And she said, there but for the grace of God. I didn't know what that meant. And she asked me to have any children. And I remember thinking, oh God, I hope she don't ask me, don't I know where they come from? You know, you always got them smart alecks around. And then she said the serenity prayer. And I don't know why she did all that, you know, did that. But that's what impressed me. She said that all the way through and didn't miss a word. Now, I didn't know the serenity prayer, but she was connecting up words. And if y'all ever been in the shape I was in, my head was jumping all over the place. I couldn't say two sentences if my life depended on it. I couldn't have said a whole sentence. And she said the serenity prayer. And I thought, God, she's smart. So don't ever hold back. If you're moved to do something or say something, please do it. Because that impressed me so much. I don't know, she must have said a few hundred thousand more words, but I never heard another one of them. And she took me to my first meeting. I had a broke arm where my husband had tore up the telephone on it. I guess y'all know about telephonitis, do you? Didn't think you did. And that was part of the therapy then, remember? To get on that phone and call people without a drink. I said, what are you talking about? I ain't never made a phone call without a drink in my hand. But that worked, you know. And I finally found out why. She told me. She said, well, said it might not keep you from drinking. The other person might not can keep you from drinking. But the time it takes for you to dial the phone might be all you need to decide not to drink. That might be all the time you need. So I started going to AA, and I went. Here's where I didn't know what y'all were talking about. I was so ashamed. I was so ashamed of being a woman alcoholic. And you'd tell me to stick with the women, and I didn't want to get over here and flirt with the men or talk with them or shoot the shit with them or something. My vocabulary when I got here, you think it's bad today? No, I have really cleaned up my language, and I never meant to, but I did. It just happens. It just happens. Work the steps and see how much you change. I am the best person I've ever been in my life. I have the cleanest thoughts I've ever had in my life. And I love it. I am a good person today. I can be trusted. And it's through no fault of mine. I know what I am. But I can tell dirty jokes. Y'all must not need to hear one. God didn't give me one for you today. That's funny. I always tell a joke, but I ain't got one right now. She moved and went to Cross, South Carolina, she and her husband did. And I quit going to AA because I was right about the third step, and I knew what I'd done wrong. I knew, had known for years what my mistakes was. But when I got to the third step, I really did know. I was raised a Methodist. They have never used enough water to wash the first sin off. So I went to the Baptist church and I got dunked. I come out of there just shiny pure. So good and clean. And I started going to church. And so, of course, I didn't need AA. And I quit. I learned a lot in church. I learned a lot about the Bible. I studied with a group of ladies. And I learned a lot. But I didn't learn a damn thing about alcoholism. I didn't learn anything about how to stay sober. I have no quarrel with the church, but I can't stay sober in church. I can't even get good in church because I start talking about people and gossiping and feeling guilty again. I guess God wants me to serve Him in the basements, not the pulpit. Or the sanctuary, because He lets me go to all AA meetings in church, but man, I get messed up if I go up there and sit and smell good and look pretty. That always did get me in trouble. Smelling good and looking pretty. But anyhow, I was fortunate enough to get drunk again. And I say that because I must have been the biggest bitch to live with that ever walked. You ever seen one of them sanctimonious people that's so good? Wear it like a banner. Look at me. I sacrificed so much for you. You know, Jesus, if He'd have known I was coming along, He wouldn't have had to crawl up on that cross. I was also fortunate enough to have an accident. I drank about a year. And I was back into wearing wigs and being glamorous again. So I had a brand new Buick. And I went out from work one night and backed that thing into a brick building. My wig flew off. And there I was, you know, going to get me a drink. Well, just got off from work, so I wasn't drunk, but I was high on anticipation of a drink. And I hadn't slowed the car down any. When I put it in gear, it just leapt back into that Greenback Stamp store. And there I was. I wasn't too glamorous that night with my wig all off and my car banged up. So I went out and got drunk. Went home and wrecked the front end under the carport. So the next morning when I come to, there was an AA woman by my bed. And you know what? I said good morning just like she's there every morning. Today can't believe why I didn't ask her, what are you doing in my bedroom? But I just said, good morning. I didn't know how she got there. I didn't know if I called her. Or I just didn't know anything. I thought, what in the hell is she doing here? But I didn't say that. You know how phony we are. So I chatted with her. And I thought, well, why don't she leave? And then as I come to, you know how when the more you come to, the more shaky you get. And she kept talking. I said, don't you got to go home and cook supper or something? She said, oh, no, I'm fine. Everything's all right at home. I'll be fine. I'd think of something else to say to her, trying to get rid of. Finally, she said, Rose, do you want to go to Palmetto Center? And about the time she said that, I remembered that wrecked car, and I said, yeah. I didn't know what Palmetto Center was, never heard of it, but I sure didn't want to stay home with that wrecked car. So it was a voc rehab treatment run facility for substance abuse, alcohol. I don't even think they knew the term substance abuse, and it was alcohol. I think they abused some substances, but nobody ever mentioned it. And the only drugs in my story are amphetamines. I used to get them at Myrtle Beach, so worked 12-hour shifts, you know, and I didn't take them for what they did for me. I took them so I could stay awake and drink. I wouldn't take them things by itself. They'll work you to death. I don't understand drug addicts, I tell you. I used to have to chew gum to keep from boring the customers to death. I'd just talk them to death, you know, and my mouth would fly open. I couldn't even control it. Still can't sometimes, but I wound up in treatment, and it was a good thing. It was a good thing. That was before they got all the psychobabble and stuff that they got. Sometimes I think they get too far away from the simplicity. It wasn't too AA oriented, but I'd already been introduced to AA, so I knew some people that it had worked for. And one day, it was so dark and gloomy, and I hated being there. I didn't know what they were talking about either. They wanted to talk about the here and now. They wanted to, you know, I'd want to talk about my family, my children, and my husband. I want to talk about that sucker bad. They would not let me. What about right here, right now? So I told them what they could do with it right here, right now. Oh, I was so full of bitterness and hatred and hostility and bitterness and remorse and guilt and shame. There was one fellow in my group, and he would go way around the building to keep from passing me in the hall because he knew I was going to cuss him out just for being there and in my way. You know, I don't know why they didn't kick me out, but I was a very, very bitter person. And naturally, I went through blaming everybody and everything. They wouldn't listen to it. I thought, this is the overpaidest staff in the world. They don't know a thing about nothing. It's funny how we get to be experts, isn't it? But I did. Peggy took me there, the lady that was sitting by my bed. And she told me, she said, get involved in everything, whether you understand it or whether you want to. I said, but don't sit and look at television. Get involved in everything here, whether it's mandatory or not. And I did that. I told somebody outside today, they told me to be down here at 7:30, I was here. I do what I'm told today. My way did not work, folks. I tried it hard. I tried it long. And I got beat up real bad. So my way does not work. This way does. These guidelines for living here do work. So I went to a seekers meeting. It was just a little old meeting where all us drunks would get in there and philosophize. But it was the first time I ever got to talk about God or whether or not I believed in Him or my thoughts about Him in my whole life. I was 42 years old. And had never, never talked about God. I had sang Jesus Love Me loud as any little kid in church. Never felt a thing. Always felt condemned. And it was a start for me. Somebody asked me who I was one time. And I told them my name. Said, no, who are you? And I told them my name again. No, who are you? I didn't know. If you wouldn't settle for a name, I didn't know who I was. So it was the beginning for me. I didn't know how to identify any feelings. You know, confused, just jumbled, hate, bitterness, disgust. I knew all the negative ones. I knew nothing about caring and love. See, I thought my husband would say things like, if you can't quit for me, quit for the children. Any of you all ever tried to prove that you love somebody enough to quit drinking for them? Do you know that desperation? So I thought I didn't have the capability of love. I didn't want to come home when it was time to come home. Because I didn't know if they wanted me. I got a card one week. I cried all week. I hated that. I hated that weakness. I didn't know what it was about. And I couldn't quit crying. And it just went on and on. I got this card. It had 29 signatures on it. So if anybody ever passes a card at a meeting, sign it. You don't have to know who's going to get it. I still got the card, and I still don't know a lot of people on there. Didn't matter. The card said somebody cares. And it was from people in AA. I got another card while I was there from one smartass. Said, congratulations. I said, God, she knows where I'm at, and she's saying that. And you opened it up. She said, it's dangerous to get well. I don't send get well cards to people in treatment. So then I knew that I could come back. And my old boss, I got fired. He sent word he wanted to see me. So I got my same old job back. I found out people did care. I said, well, I'll put as much into this thing as I did into drinking and see if it works. What have I got to lose? I'm here to stand here to tell you the truth. I have never had to put into this program what I did into trying to stay drunk. I have never had to work that hard at anything except trying to stay drunk. I've never had to steal or lie or cheat to get to a meeting. And I'd had to do all those things to drink. And I have no illusions about me. You know, if I started drinking today, I'd do anything to get the next drink. Anything. I don't hold any reservations about me and my disease. So I came back and I started going to meetings, started back working. I'm so glad no smart aleck counselor up there knew about that 90 and 90. Had 5 kids and a husband, a job, and trying to go to AA. And if Ed had said 90 and 90, I'd have said, well, just shoot me, you know. I couldn't have done it. So thank God for sponsors that said, set your own pace. You don't have to be through by Friday, but you got to do. And I started working. I'd go to step meetings, and I'd try to work the steps. And I listened to you share how you'd put them into your life. The little old girls I work with, they never asked me to go anywhere in their life before. All of a sudden they said, Rose, why don't you go to Little Nashville with us? Little Nashville was some juke joint up on Dorchester Road. And she'd say, we won't let you drink. I said, no thank you, but I was thinking, I'd like to see you stop me, bitch. Had a lot of AA people that came there and supported me through that. It wasn't a year till I had a better job offer. I had no training. They wanted me to be a counselor at the Navy Hospital for the sailors. And I was satisfied with where I was. Spiritually, in every sense of the word, I was as high on this program as I've ever been. And I didn't want to change. And this Boat Rehab counselor came down and asked me, would I go apply for the job? She had recommended me. And I said, I don't have any counseling skills. I said, it'd be a waste of time, but I'll go home and ask Jim. I knew Jim wouldn't want me working around them sailors. I knew that. Well, I went home and told him that there was this job opening up at the Navy Hospital working with active duty sailors, and Florence wanted me to apply for it. It was like $10,000 a year, and I always knew I'd be rich if I ever made $10,000 a year. And GS something another, 7, I believe. This is way back in the 70s. And he said, well, sure, why don't you go ahead and apply? I about dropped my teeth, and I had real teeth then. I didn't know what was happening. So I went ahead and talked to the psychologist up there, and I swear, folks, I had 1 year sobriety. I'd been in AA those 3 years and 9 months before, or 6 months something. I had to count it up. I knew it one time. And then relapse and treatment, and they used all that as experience. You can't buy that kind of education, folks. Anyway, I retired from there in February 94. I am a retired person. I told God, I said, I'll furnish the footwork. You got to do the rest. And you got to handle the disappointment if I don't get the job, because I don't like it when I don't get what I go after. And I learned I can talk to God that way. Isn't that wonderful? And he can handle all the stuff in the world. Everybody gives him credit for the good stuff. I give him credit for the shit, too. When I did that inventory, I found out I wasn't that good at being that bad to cause all these world disasters. So he gets credit for bad days and good days, and I just live. I am one of the happiest retired people you ever seen. I love not going to work. Oh. I'm bowling with the senior citizens. I'm good. I really am. I don't know if any of y'all know a thing about bowling, but I started out with 116 average. I'm 156 now. I can do things. You know, I got grandbabies. I got they wear me out now. I could rather bowl than attend to them any day. But I got a brand new one. This daughter has been angry with me for a long time. She had a baby the 15th of April. I'm watching. I got 2 more minutes. And and she had about 10:20 in the morning. Now, I haven't been part of this pregnancy at all. She's just not chose to have me in her life. And at 1:30 she called me and told me. And she's a beautiful little girl. I have 3 granddaughters now and 1 little grandson. And I hope they never, never. And 1 little granddaughter, she loves to sniff them wipes. She's already into sniffing. I said, my Lord. Yay, but too, she's just a bundle of energy, just going. She loves to smell perfume. I used to love to sniff, sniff gas when Daddy was filling up the car. I didn't know what all that meant. But today I do. I do believe this is a genetically passed on disease. And none of my family escaped, even the ones that don't drink. I have 2 children in the program. One's got probably 10 or 11 years, and the other one just picked up his... Was Bert 7? 7th chip, I believe. And I'm so happy. They're here because of you, not because of me. You welcomed them. You loved them till they could love themselves. I have other children that have other sets of problems. One is so angry. He is so angry. I just look for him to be blowing up any time, just going off. He has nothing. He works hard, but he has nothing, you know, to hang on to. He don't like the church, and he hates MAAs. Now, he loves his mama, but he's just angry at everything. He used to be the caretaker to the other children when they were out there using. He'd buy them drinks and then come home and tell on them. And I have a daughter that's got a tremendous weight problem. You know, she agonized over that. She's tried OA and other 12-step programs on it. She lives out in a rural area and they don't have that many meetings. So I hope she will find her way, because she really don't like herself. I love them today and have a good relationship with most of them. I have a son. I don't even know where he's at. He likes sick women. Boy, he loves to get involved with sick women. So I don't know what's out there for him, but I hope he finds it. Not another sick woman, but it. You know that elusive it we all look for? It's been a really joy being here with you, and I look forward to the rest of the weekend. I was tickled to death I was a Friday night speaker. So I'm ready to celebrate the rest of the weekend with the other speakers, and thank you so much. I love you.